Hey, Moose Room listeners, Emily here. We at the Moose Room are busy getting ready for our May mental health series, and we want to hear from you. What questions do you have about mental health, mental illness, stress management, or anything in between? We would love to get your questions so we can answer them on our upcoming Ask the Expert episode for May Mental Health Awareness Month. Send your questions to themooseroom@umn.edu, or you can call and leave us a voicemail at 612-624-3610. Please note any questions or submissions that you send in will be kept anonymous. We appreciate your help and look forward to hearing from you. Welcome, everybody, to the Moose Room. Once again, OG3 and our third episode in our mental health series for the month of May. We are joined today by a very special guest, probably one of the most special ones we've had. And I'm not just saying that to, you know, be a brown noser. We are very excited to have a longtime fan of the show. One of the original fans of the show, I think. You've been with us for quite some time. And a dairy farmer in Iowa. We are joined today by Kevin Dietzel. What's up, Kevin?
Hey, so happy to be here.
We are so happy to have you. I know Brad especially is excited because you are a grazing dairy.
That's right. Exactly. And he's doing some very interesting things there with his cows too. So it's always a good thing. And we've had lots of conversations across Twitter and many different areas. So it's happy that finally you're here.
Well, we were so excited that you said yes, that you wanted to be on the show. So before we get into it though, and I mean, this is a little unfair because Kevin's a longtime listener, so he knows what's coming. But he is a guest, so he needs to be asked the two not-so-secret questions to him. Joe, go ahead.
All right, the not-so-secret questions to Kevin. Kevin, we need to know your favorite beef breed first.
Okay, you're going to have to start a new category for this one. And I hope I'm not breaking any rules. Uh-oh. I'm going to say Normandy.
We will accept that. We will accept that.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, it hasn't come out at the time we're recording this, but someone threw in a dairy breed on the beef side last week. Meg said Jersey last week. So let's run through the total quick. So that is Angus at 6, still leading, still out in front, ahead of Herefords, which is the only important thing. Herefords at 6, Black Baldy 2, Belted Galloway 2, Brahmin 1, Stabilizer 1, Gelvie 1, Scottish Highlander 1, Kianina 1, Charlet 1, Simmental 1, Loray 1, Jersey 1, and now Normandy with 1. All right, let's go to the dairy side. What is your favorite dairy breed, Kevin?
Okay, this is where I'm not sure if this is allowed. I'm going to say Normandy for my dairy breed too.
Okay.
Yes, that is.
Yeah, it's definitely allowed.
We actually is allowed. I like it.
I'm taking advantage of the dual purpose breed there.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Brad's a fan. Brad's a fan.
I am. That's like the second best answer.
I didn't say Holstein, so I didn't get.
Hey,
you
that's
guys.
Right. Yes.
You didn't widen the gap, so that's good. All right, let's hit the totals. Holstein's at 11, Jersey's at 8, Brown Swiss at 4, Montbelliard at 3, Dutch Belted at 2, and now Normandy at 2 as well.
Love to get a little bit more variety in there. So that's good. And Kevin had plenty of time to prepare. Usually people are put on the spot. So, but he knew what was coming. All right. So, you know, before we really dive into it, you know, of course, this is part of our mental health awareness series for the month of May. But first, I just want to give a little background and let Kevin give a little background. I, similar to Bradley, have communicated with Kevin quite a bit on Twitter. So I will give a plug right now. He's at Lost Lake Farmer. Give him a follow. Lots of great photos and videos. That is like my favorite thing about following you, Kevin. And I share your stuff with a lot of my non-farming friends because you just do a really great job. But I'm going to let you tell just brief overview of your farm. Bradley, you are allowed one farm-related question, so make it a good one.
I just want to, since you're plugging my social media, I have the same handle at Lost Lake Farmer on Instagram and TikTok. So nice. You can follow me on three different forums with the same handle. And I don't always have the same content. It's usually different. So if you follow me on one, it's worth following me on another because it's different pictures, different videos. Every once in a while, I'll have some crossover. But anyways.
Good promo, Kevin.
Now I got to check out TikTok.
Yeah, just a little bit about our farm. So it is me and my wife, Renee, and we are the main owner operators. We are Lost Lake Farm LLC, and LLC is because we actually went a sort of different route of getting startup funding, and we have 12 different investors who are co-owners in the farm. We own 51%, myself and my wife, and then the other 49% is owned between 12 different people. They all have different amounts, so some people we've known a while. Some people we met when we went out in the community. We did some pitches and had some community meetings to try and recruit investors. So we kind of went out of the box there because what we were trying to do didn't fit the sort of standard model, and getting financing wasn't happening. So we have 80 acres on the home farm. We own four. So we own the house and buildings and yard and a little bit of pasture. The rest we rent from my aunt and uncle, who bought it as an investment and rent it to us at market rates. We're milking 20 cows and turning all the milk into cheese on farm. We milk once a day, and right now it's in the afternoon. Normally it's in the morning. It's a different situation because we don't have an employee right now. And so normally the employee milks the morning that I make cheese because I'm busy making cheese. But without an employee to be able to fit it into the day, I do it at the end of the day. Hopefully that'll shift back to the mornings again pretty soon here. Then we also have a few pigs that we feed the whey to. We soak feed in whey, sometimes have them on pasture, kind of depends on time, if I have time to set up fence and get a group trained and that sort of thing. We are not certified organic. We follow mostly organic things. I will say the main reason we're not organic is because the way we market, which is mostly direct sales, we don't really need a third-party certification, is the main reason. So, you know, organic certification takes a lot of time, a lot of paperwork, and there is some cost to it. The other reason is we like to have antibiotics as a tool if we need it. So that is the one thing that I disagree with. We try not to use antibiotics, but there are times where it is the best tool, and it maybe that is because of a previous failure or whatever, but there are times where it is a very useful tool, and so I like to have that in the toolbox and then not have to necessarily sell that animal, because I don't have very many animals, so every animal I sell has a big impact.
Brad, I think it's time for your only question, farm question. Unless you want to text me one, and then I'll ask one. And
no, I will ask one thing. That's that cheating. One thing I find interesting about Kevin's farm is his cows have horns, and I'm curious why he has decided to leave his horns on cows. I have lots of reasons. We're doing some of that here, but I'm you know, you don't see that very often.
Okay. I have been working on my answer to that because it's hard to explain. The easiest answer is I like horns and I like how the animals look. So initially is because I follow not all, but some of the principles of biodynamics. And in biodynamics, horns are seen as an important organ for cows. And it's seen as, well, multiple things: a sensory organ, a digestive organ. And if you know anything about biodynamics, it involves a lot of things having to do with cosmic forces, other unseen things that, you know, get into spirituality, which we don't need to dive into here, but that the horns play an important part in that. And so that's where it came from originally, my reasoning. And, you know, I grew up on biodynamic farms. I trained on biodynamic farms in Germany. So I was only ever around horned mm-hmm. cows before I got my own cows. So that's the only thing I really knew. I guess to add to that, I would say I feel like it's an important part of cow behavior, how they interact with each other. And yeah, so those are all part of it. And I understand a lot of the reasons why one would not want horns. It takes more, you know, you have to make sure they have enough space, both for cow safety and human safety. And it, you know, anybody working with animals always should have spatial awareness of where the animals are. But especially if with horned animals, it doesn't matter how friendly they are, if they have a fly bothering them, or if another cow is bothering them or whatever, you know, they're not very spatially aware of you or how frail humans are. They aren't necessarily trying to hurt you, but a horn can hurt you very quickly. And so just that safety pitch, horns can be dangerous, and I'm aware of that. And I try and be, you know, really careful around my horned cows.
Sure. Well, that's good advice.
Thank you Definitely. For the safety comment, Kevin. That really means a lot to me personally.
Yeah, that makes Emily feel really good that you're addressing that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it really sounds like, Kevin, you know, you have a lot going on. And I think it's so interesting just to hear about, like you said, kind of the unconventional way you got into dairying. And, you know, using the biodynamics for some people, that's unconventional, you know, horned cows. I know you have a lovely mix of breeds and color in your pastures as well. And, you know, like I said, there's a lot going on. I feel like we've barely scratched the surface, making cheese, having pigs, you know, working with your wife. What would you say are kind of some of the biggest challenges that you've faced in kind of your unconventional path into dairying and even through dairying currently?
Well, I don't know if you knew this was coming, and so you were just kind of lobbing me a softball or what, but mental health, by far the biggest challenge since I've started doing this full time. Definitely. I mean, there have been a lot of challenges, but by far the most challenging thing for me has been mental health.
Yeah, I think that's really, you know, good that you recognize that. You know, I was expecting, and a lot of people do this, is they'll, you know, just give me the laundry list of their stressors, right? And I'm sure you could think of a lot of different challenges, you know, challenges with having cows with horns, challenges with, you know, making cheese, things break down, etc. But I think they can all kind of be summed up back to mental health. Right? Because all of these things take their toll on us as people. And so I think it's really great that you just kind of went right for it. You're like, yeah, my mental health is a challenge. So do you want to, you know, share a little bit more about that? I know you share a lot on Twitter about it, which is how I kind of first got connected with you, you know, seeing you, you know, talk about the good days and the bad days. And here's a good picture and here's a bad picture, you know? Yeah, would love to know a little bit more about how you got into that.
I'll start by saying part of why it's more obvious to me, I think, that mental health is my biggest challenge is that I have, you know, a clear before farming and after farming. I mean, farming has always been a part of my life, but not in the same way as somebody who grew up on a farm, started, you know, working on the family farm and, you know, and then maybe at some point quit the off-farm job. Depression has been, you know, a big problem for me the last 5 years or challenge. And, you know, looking back, I can see where I had some issues with depression before that, but it wasn't in the forefront. It wasn't really as big a problem before. And when it really started to be something that really had to be addressed was back in 2016. That's not when we started our farm, but that's when I had no other off-farm employment. That's when we started March of 2015, or 2016 was when I stopped managing hogs at a nearby facility. I have worked in conventional agriculture. I worked in, you know, hog confinements for a few years before this. And then September is when we started selling cheese. That fall of 2016, I was milking twice a day at that point. I had a full-time employee, which was part of the business plan, who was doing, I think, five milkings a week and some other farm tasks. And that was that filled up his 40 hours. And we had enough milk at that point that this is how I remember it anyways. I was making cheese every other day. I was making two cheeses when I started, and both of them were pasta filata cheeses, which is mozzarella and provolone are both in that category. So that means they're stretched in hot water. Both of those processes, without going into detail of the cheese make process, essentially I started at 3:30 in the morning, and the earliest I would get done would be the following midnight. My employee would do the evening milking on that day, but it was too much for him to do the following morning. Didn't have enough recovery time. So if you can tell, I might have still harbor some hard feelings here. So I would, you know, I would do that like 18, 20, 22 hour day. You know, sometimes it would go till 2 or 3 in the morning. And then I would get up at 5 and milk cows the next morning. And then I would go to bed the following evening, you know, whenever I could, get up at 3:30 the next morning after that and do it again. So I did that all that fall. So between that and the stress of, you know, we were 6 months behind our marketing plan. So we were already running low on cash, and we had like 3 weeks of market before the market ended, and our plan was to start selling cheese right at the beginning of summer. Instead, we hit the end of summer, so we ended up doing a bunch of wholesale and trying to get wholesale the cheese buyers to want to buy it. And you know, there were, you know, my life is stressful now. It was 10 times worse then, and I feel like that's when it all just really. Okay, you can be a little bit depressed where you're stressed or feel down some days. If you are really short on sleep, that is going to make it a lot worse. So that's when it became a real problem, was when I was doing that. So that was a bit of a long answer, but you can see how that was a really stressful time where I was also really excited because I was finally living out my dream, but then feeling really bad because it felt like a nightmare. And it was, at some point, at the encouraging of my wife, I tried to see professional help. And that was a long process, which we can go into later itself, of trying to get the right kind of help and so forth. I wasn't even on Twitter. Well, maybe in 2017, I can't remember when I went on Twitter, but I didn't, I wasn't sharing about the mental health stuff right away. But I feel like for me, it started just one day. I was just like, I just feel horrible. I feel angry. And I feel like the world needs to know that I'm hurting. And I, you know, for no particular reason. And I just started tweeting about it. And at that point, it started out just sort of as venting, and then a lot of people were like, "You're so brave," and things like that. And I'm like, "Well, you know, I was just kind of venting and getting it out there. But, and I think why people don't is because they're afraid of the negative reactions. And the closest thing to a negative reaction I've got on social media when talking about my depression and my experiences is people doing the, and it was done in not in a bad way, they were with bad intentions, is when people say, well, there are so many people that would love to be doing what you're doing, you know, that sort of comparative thing, which is not helpful, which, you know, people that have been around mental health, you know, they kind of know that, you know, it's something people do and they're trying to help. It's not helpful, but that, so that's the closest to a negative reaction I've had. I've never had somebody say, would you just be quiet with the whining? You know, it's possible that some people don't, that they maybe came on to watch a look at my cow pictures, so that's why they started following me, or to watch the cheese making, and they were turned off by it and they left. You know, I don't get to do exit interviews when people stop following me, but I don't think I've lost a lot because of it. Mostly I've gotten really good feedback. I've made actually some really good connections, you know, between Emily, other people that have reached out, you know, often via direct message, they'll say, hey, anytime you want to send me a message, you know, are you okay? Or, you know, or they'll just give me their cell phone number and they'll say, you know, if you need to call me, you know, just complete strangers that just know me through Twitter that are just like, I'm here for you. If you need to talk, here's my number. Call me day or night.
That's really cool. That's pretty impressive that people are willing to reach out with that. And I think it's amazing that you can reach out to the world of the internet. And we all know how the internet can be sometimes. It can be a pretty harsh place. So it's exciting to me to hear that you've had such a good experience with it. What I wanted to ask you, Kevin, was you kind of touched on it a little bit. You were feeling bad because the thing that you've been working so hard to do is your dream job and you're not enjoying it. And now maybe you feel guilty about not enjoying it. And then you're working yourself to the bone with no sleep. Do you realize what's happening when you're doing that? Or do you just kind of stretch yourself thin and someone else had to point out to you that, you know, it's okay that you're feeling this way? Were you self-aware enough in the moment to know how stretched thin you were, and because I feel like I see that in farmers a lot. They're just so used to the daily grind that they don't realize that maybe that's not the way it has to be.
I mean, I realized that I was stretched thin, you know, realizing the connection with mental health and that sort of thing. There were a lot of self-awareness things, you know. I mean, it's still a journey, but that's a lot of what therapy has been, is noticing what is going on and what the feedback loops are. I mean, therapy is different for everybody. For me, it's not sitting on a couch and talking about my childhood or whatever. It's going through, okay, how are you reacting to when something goes bad, when you're in a good mood and you're reacting well, versus how are you reacting when you are feeling depressed and it brings you down even more, and you're blaming yourself for it or whatever, you know, like almost like picking it apart analytically so that to be more self-aware. So a lot of it starts with the awareness and then developing ways of trying to train yourself to react differently. So that self-awareness has come with time, and it's not easy.
So following up with that, Kevin, you know, when you were feeling this way and talking about that self-awareness piece, you know, now hindsight's always 20/20. Were there specific things that you kind of noticed started to slip? I mean, you talked about not getting enough sleep, but maybe did you notice, you know, you felt angry more, or maybe you were getting in, you know, more fights with your wife or yelling at the kids a little more, or just feeling like you couldn't get out of bed some days? You know, what were some of those things that you kind of noticed that maybe, you know, Renee, your wife, noticed, and that eventually became a part of you thinking about the self-awareness piece? And what are those feedback loops? And maybe what are the signs that I'm not doing well right now because X, Y, and Z are happening?
It's a really tricky question to answer, because it was, you know, all kinds of things happening at once. Renee has been really supportive, and she has definitely, you know, noticed a lot of things and tried a lot of different ways to be helpful, which is not easy. There needs, and probably there are somewhere, there needs to be a support group for spouses of depressed people, because it's not an easy job. You know, I definitely noticed, I guess the biggest thing I noticed was my inability to have get up and go or gumption. You know, I'm naturally a hard worker. I didn't go into this because I don't like to work. I didn't go into this expecting it was going to be easy, expecting I was going to be able to work 40-hour weeks. I never had that expectation, but I did expect I would be able to sleep 8-hour nights sometimes, which I do now sometimes, not as much as I would like. I'm still working on that, but, and be able to do some things that weren't farm related. So anger, irritability, losing my temper, those things definitely came along with it for me. But I think even before depression was a big thing, I think that was something I struggled with. And I didn't make the connection that, that those things were linked until much later. I think Renee may have. So, you know, anger works differently in different people. I guess I should be really thankful that my anger, I don't get angry with people as much. You know, I don't like conflict. Sometimes that can be a problem too, but I get mad at inanimate objects. And unfortunately, I get mad at cows. And I always kick myself afterwards, which doesn't necessarily make it better. The anger piece has gotten a lot better. And I, you know, therapy has helped with that. But I think one of the things that I think medication, which is another topic that we may or may not want to get into, but medication has helped with the anger piece. That's the piece that it has helped most markedly with. And medication, getting medications right is a whole journey of its own. That helped a lot, but also therapy and sleep.
All right. I have one more follow-up question I want to jump into really, really quick. And then I will let Joe ask a question that I know he's chomping at the bit to ask. But Kevin, and just keep this answer short. So on episode one for our mental health series, we were joined by Dr. Megan King, who has actually done research that suggests that when farmers are in poor mental health, their animals may be in poor health, or, you know, welfare may not be as high of a priority. And I was just curious if you've, you know, maybe noticed that, or you know, and if you don't want to answer this, you don't have to. But, you know, just curious if hearing that, you know, makes you think, yeah, like, when the cows are better, I'm better, and vice versa. You know, and we really talked about it being a two-way street where it's not just human dependent and not just cow dependent, but kind of goes both ways. So I'm just curious if you have any, you know, observations or thoughts on that with your experience on the farm.
I guess I will say it's most obvious in the parlor. If you have a bad attitude or a bad mood, the cows will throw it right back at you. And like literally they will kick you more and they will poop on you more. But then on the like long-term health aspect, I think it's more just that my brain is healthier, I'm able to make better management decisions and thereby helping all the health outcomes better, but not necessarily, of course, it's hard to know exactly, but that's what I've observed.
Okay, Joe, I just need an isolated soundbite of when my brain is healthy, my cows do better, or I can make decisions better. I just need that. That can be a slogan for a future t-shirt or something.
Sure, I'll pull it out.
Like that right there, that sums it up for me. Like that's what I want every farmer to hear. So maybe just like play that, you know, on loop a couple times.
Like an affirmation.
In the episode, yeah.
Yeah, I think... You know, I'm relating to Kevin a lot right now when we talk about, you know, the irritability and the anger. When I've struggled with my own mental health, that has been one of the things I noticed first. The irritability is big. My anger at inanimate objects is through the roof when my mental health isn't straight. I really relate to that a lot. So one of the things, Kevin, that I wanted to get into is how you made the step to commit to going to therapy. And take me through that journey just a little bit of like, you know, when did you decide, yeah, I should go? Did you have to have someone like your wife say, you know, you really should go? How did you go through that decision to actually jump in and commit to therapy?
Well, first off, let me say, I am lucky that I have a wife who has a full-time job with benefits and health insurance that covers mental health. And so that has made therapy an affordable option for me. And that doesn't mean it's not affordable if you don't have health insurance, but I can't really speak to that. But I feel incredibly privileged that I don't have to take that into consideration in whether or not to go to therapy. Like, money is not part of it. I don't even have to do a copay. That is just an incredible privilege. So it definitely was at the urging of my wife to start with. And so there was probably a year, maybe even two, of reading books, talking to friends and relatives and getting suggestions of other people that had struggled with things, people sending me books and articles and trying strategies on my own before my wife was like, look, you know, we need to, you know, we have good health insurance. You need to go see the professionals. Like, this, you know, this is too big a problem to address just by, you know, reading a book, even if it was written by a mental health professional. You need somebody to address your problem specifically. You can't self-diagnose and fix it with diet and exercise, which is basically what I was trying to do. And from that step of saying, okay, we need to see mental health professional, it's okay, first, okay, what's available in our area? And we're, again, lucky that we live, so we're about a half hour north of Ames, which is not a large city, but it's a city that has a hospital and a large McFarland Clinic system and so forth. We're only an hour from Des Moines, which has even more. And so many people in rural areas would have a lot fewer options or would have to drive further. You know, we had options to look through. And so, okay, do we start with this therapy clinic or here or there? You know, and we essentially drew a name out of a hat of one that looked like it was a good fit, that had both therapists and clinicians on staff who would, you know, who could prescribe. So we thought, okay, you know, we can go to one place that we can, everything that may be needed. Because I went into it, I was like, you know, the first session, they have sort of an intake to kind of assess what is it really, you know, what are you dealing with? What do we think we would recommend for you? And then they direct you to, I'm trying to think. So I ended up doing, they didn't have an actual psychiatrist on staff, but they had a nurse practitioner who could prescribe medications, which I guess, you know, my primary care physician could also prescribe. They can prescribe all the things that a psychiatrist can. They just, it's not their specialty. So they first recommended that I go to see, do a session with the nurse practitioner to get, to go down the medication route, which I was pretty skeptical on at first. I was like, oh, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to get all drugged up and start to mess with things that way. But if you know, these guys are the professionals, I'm trying to do the professional route, I'll do what they think is right. I did not like the nurse practitioner. I do not know where he got his training, but he made comments like, well, farmers back in the day used to work night and day, 7 days a week, and they never had to take any break, you know, like, that is like, anybody who has ever heard anything about mental health knows that's a bad thing to tell a depressed person, that, like, you know, there are other people that are doing what you're doing and or doing it and working harder. you know, like that is like the worst possible thing to say.
I wish everybody could have seen our faces, because me, Brad, and Joe were all like, ugh, when you said that. That's
That's, it's really obvious to you guys. Yeah. And he prescribed me to, I don't remember what it's called, but an antidepressant. The struggle with antidepressants is that they take a while to, you know, it's not like you take it. It's not like a pain medication that you take it and it takes effect within 20 minutes or whatever. It can take a week or two or three before you really know. And so he prescribed it and he said, you know, okay, we'll have another session in, I don't remember what it was. It was a month or 6 weeks or something like that, and review if we need to do a different dosage or try a different medication or something like that. And let me add, this was early February, and February tends to be, as for many people who even don't struggle with depression otherwise, February can be a hard month because there's not much daylight. The weather tends to be gray, and it's not like pretty snow. It's like ugly brown, half melty snow. I don't need to go into why February is a hard month, but whatever that medication was, it made me super tired. Like I could hardly move. It made me twice as depressed. I barely made it through that month without committing suicide. Like that was bad. And I probably should have, if I had trusted that provider, I probably would have called them after a week and said, look, this is making me way worse. I can't, but I didn't trust him. And so I was like, well, I'm supposed to go through the month. So I, you know, kept going for a month. And I don't think I had a second session with that guy. I think I just stopped taking it eventually because it was just so bad. And I didn't go back, but I ended up going to another therapist at a different place. And I saw that therapist for several months, and it seemed like it was okay, but I was also getting some, you know, not great judgy comments from her, I felt like. And I felt like she just didn't get what I was going through. She didn't understand, you know, like the whole like working 7 days a week and a slow day being working 8 hours. I don't think she ever got that. Or, you know, like me saying that, like, I have a hard time getting up from lunch and I get stuck watching TV. She was like, well, you know, people who work at jobs, they can't watch TV at lunch. It's like, well, you know, like, I don't get an evening to do fun things because I'm working 16 hours a day. Like, I don't think she ever. So at any rate, I stuck with her for several months and I eventually stopped. And so I went then almost a full year without going to therapy. And then my wife was actually going to therapy, not for depression, for other issues having to do probably with burnout from grad school. Her therapist actually requested that I come in for one of her sessions to talk about our relationship and my observations of her during the day and things like that. My depression came up while I was there in my wife's session. And essentially that therapist sold me on therapy and said, you know, we don't recommend that spouses see the same therapist. There's another therapist in our office that I think would be great for you. And so before I left that day, I made an appointment with that therapist. And now it's been almost a year and a half I've been with that therapist. It was not a straightforward, like, I'm going to go see a therapist. Let me look one up in the phone book, call them, make an appointment and start going. And, you know, and I know other people have had even more difficult roads. Like, it's deciding to go to a therapist is hard. Finding the right therapist is also hard because, you know, they're not always going to be the right fit for you. And if they're a good therapist, they might recognize that they're not the right fit and maybe recommend a colleague who they think might fit your situation better. And actually, another podcast I listen to, which is from NPR, it's called Life Kit. They have one all about how to find a therapist. I wish I had heard that 3 years ago, but I only heard that a month ago. So
I'll put that in the show notes. I think that's a good thing to do. And I don't think I was quite aware of how difficult it could be. I mean, I knew not every therapist was for every person, right? I mean, you have to have a good connection with that person. They have to understand what you're going through. I wasn't aware of how difficult it could be to find the right therapist. Emily, is that something that you have any thoughts on that? Like what?
Something I always say about therapists is finding the right therapist is like shoe shopping. You usually need to try a few before you find the right fit. Sometimes you'll get lucky, but usually not. I know, like Kevin, I have seen 3 different therapists, and I actually ended up going back to number 2 because number 2 had referred me to the 3rd therapist, and it just wasn't quite right. And I revisited with them about that. And they were able to basically make room in their caseload for me. And I've been seeing that therapist for, probably about 1.5 years also, Kevin. So it can be difficult, and it can be really easy to get discouraged. And, you know, Kevin's story is not unlike other farmers I've heard with running into therapists who just don't seem to get specifically the farm lifestyle, and that it is 7 days a week of work, and just, you know, taking a long weekend is not really a viable option. And so I think that is a big challenge, and something that we've been working on and are aware of in the farm and rural stress arena is kind of that like me professionals. That's really, really important.
I find it really interesting that you were able to get medication, Kevin, without finding the right person to talk to. Like that, to me, like clearly that nurse practitioner was not the right fit, and you knew that. But I mean, that's kind of the toss up, right? Like, of course you want to have the right person to talk to when you get the medication, but sometimes you need that medication to have, like you said, the gumption and the get up and go to then go through that process of trying to find the right therapist. So I don't know. I mean, Kevin, Emily, thoughts on like, I don't know. I'm just interested in the dynamic of that medication and therapy and then not being able to do both at the same time.
And I think it happens in different ways, right? Everybody's situation is different. Everybody's inroad to mental health care is different. You know, some people start medication first because they may tell their primary care physician, you know, hey, I think I'm depressed, or, you know, there are certain questionnaires and instruments they can use. The PHQ-9 is one that's commonly used for depression and suicidal thought. And so a doctor, you know, a primary care physician can't provide, you know, counseling or therapy. And so they may just go, okay, you know, here's medication and it's done. Or they may go, here's medication and we're going to refer you to this therapist. I was really fortunate. That was my situation where my therapist, the one I currently see, they're actually integrated into my healthcare system. And so my therapist and my doctor can both see my chart, which is really useful since my therapist cannot prescribe medication, but they can still communicate about that. And so anyways, and then where some people, and that was kind of where I started, that I went to therapy first. And again, I saw a licensed therapist, but they weren't a nurse practitioner. They could not prescribe anything. So they recommended, I think you should talk to your doctor, and you can tell them that I said this would be my recommendation, but they're the doctor, so they can decide what they do. And so that was really useful too. I got really lucky, and that was for my first therapist. Just that I had that guidance from them of kind of what to say to my doctor and what would work for me or what they thought might work. You know, my experience with it is it just happens so differently for everybody. There are sometimes situations where, you know, if it's not a physician's area of expertise, it's just, oh, here's a medication and go on your way. And for some people that works, and for some people it doesn't. And for some people, it's, you know, just therapy and they don't need medication and that works. And for some people like myself, like Kevin, it's a combination of both. And that's what, you know, comes together to make it work. You know, the most important thing is we all need to share our stories about mental health, I think, because they're all different and everybody experiences it differently, but we will still have some similarities. Like we were saying last week, where we're not all in the same boat, but we're all in the same ocean. So, you know, we can navigate these waters together. Kevin, I'd be curious to hear what you think on this as well.
I actually had a really similar experience to yours. So I had that first nurse practitioner that didn't work out. And then I kind of, you know, I had been skeptical of the medication route from the start, and that kind of reinforced that. And then I went to see a therapist, but then it was actually that first therapist that didn't work out who, after, you know, several sessions was like, you know, I think we're having trouble, you know, working on the things that we need to work on in therapy because your depression is pretty major. And so if you can see a prescriber of some kind, then maybe the medications can bring that depression level down to a manageable level where maybe we can work on some strategies through therapy. So the medication alone isn't going to just get rid of it. Like you said, for some people that might just work like magic. Most people probably it's not magical, but occasionally it might. And so she actually referred me to a psychiatrist who has her own practice in Ames. And so I was able to get it, you know, but she had a several month waiting period and I actually got in. And so I'm still seeing the psychiatrist, not as frequently as therapy, but, you know, every couple months, you know, we think we've got the right combination of meds right now, but we're still kind of seeing if we need to make tweaks of, you know, dosages or timing or whatever. You know, it's hard. And, you know, and it took a couple years at even working with a psychiatrist who, you know, this is what they do. This is her specialty to get to that point. And that can be very frustrating. The other part I want to touch on is just finding the time to go to these appointments is hard. It's exhausting and it's hard. When we got to the point where I realized I needed to see professional help, you know, it was like the success of our business depends on me getting better, because this is going to fail if I don't get better. And so we need to make time. It is an essential part of work. It's still hard to find to make the time. And you know what? Honestly, during this pandemic, insurance will pay for telehealth. And so I can do it from home. And so I don't have to take the time to drive to town. And that is huge. But at the end of June, that's going to run out. And I don't know why insurance providers won't pay for it regularly. I don't understand, especially something like therapy or even psychiatry, where, you know, there isn't anything about physical presence that is more beneficial necessarily. But for somebody like me who lives rurally and has a really busy work life, making the time 40 minutes to drive there, plus park, walk into the building, do the appointment, walk out, drive, you know, like it's taking several hours out of my day. And that's hard to find several hours. And so I've really liked the telehealth, but we're going to have to find a way to make that work again in July.
Yeah, we're going to have to put Emily on that. It's kind of sick her on that problem about telehealth being covered.
Working on it.
Yeah.
I did want to make a point, you know, Kevin, how you were talking about, you know, getting the dosages of medication right, but still going back and visiting with your psychiatrist every few months. And that's what I say to people too, is the goal, I think, for everybody involved in this, whether it's your physician, a therapist, psychiatrist, et cetera, is to get you to that point where all you need is just, you know, I compare it to routine maintenance, like on your car. You know, you take your car in for an oil change, they run diagnostics. Same thing, you know, take yourself in. How are things working? Is everything going well? What could we maybe change? What seems to be causing issues that wasn't last time? And so I think it's really important that you, you know, said that. I'm really glad that you brought that up, because I think that that's a really important piece of it. And it's not, oh, I got this prescription once, I'm good to go for the rest of my days. Or, you know, I went to therapy, but I feel better now, so I don't need to go back. We need to keep up with ourselves and keep up with our mental health, just like how we go and get physical, you know, checkups. You know, we're supposed to get a physical every year. I'm not sure everybody does. Anywho, my point is just making sure that you stay with it and that you don't ignore it again, right? I think that that's a really important point that you have made as well. But we are, kind of running low on time here. So I'm curious, Bradley or Joe, any other questions?
One of the things I've been thinking about since we started this series is, and Kevin kind of addressed some of it, like with the questions and the comments he was getting from some of the initial people that he saw. You know, I feel like what I've seen play out when I was in practice and visiting farms is that there is this guilt that comes to farmers when they feel like, you know, it's completely unrealistic for Kevin to be working 22-hour days, sleeping almost nothing, and then getting up and milking and doing it all again. Like, that's completely unrealistic. But there's like a feeling of guilt, I feel like, because people expect farmers to be like the pillars of society, and they've always seen them as like, you know, just rock solid and working hard, and that's just expected. In my mind, it's not fair, but there's a lot of guilt that comes with that feeling when people are like, well, you're supposed to be the hardest working person of all of us, like, and you're breaking down. Can both Emily and you, Kevin, can you just talk about that feeling that might creep in, that guilt?
Guilt is a huge part of that, and that is, well, there are many, you know, they talk about negative self-talk is a lot of what therapists talk about. And guilt is a big, you know, guilt that you place on yourself is a big part of that. And it is a hard one to overcome. It's, you know, what I often call, you know, my therapist gives me mental gymnastics to do. And that's what it feels like is, you know, because you're having to build new habits mentally, which, you know, that's the tough thing. You have to like use your brain to fix your brain. But, you know, like even a couple episodes ago, you guys had somebody on who's just like an amazing person who does, you know, he was a radio, I don't remember his name, he was a radio host, and he does hog sites, and he manages his, you know, beef feedlot, you know, just like, and he works out for an hour every morning. I was listening to that and, you know, like I should just be in awe of this person who can get by like that, and just be like, wow, that's cool that he can do all that stuff. But instead I'm my brain goes to, well, shoot, I guess I'm not actually that hardworking. You know, like that's where my brain automatically goes. Where the therapy kicked in then is the fact that I noticed right away that I did that. And I was like, well, you know, like I'm feeling guilty, and I still felt guilty, but I noticed that I was feeling guilty and that I shouldn't feel guilty, and that I was just comparing myself to somebody in that we're all different. You know, some people need 6 hours of sleep. Some people need 9, you know, just as an example, and comparing yourself to somebody else, it's a fool's game. But yeah, dealing with the guilt is, it's an ongoing challenge, to stop feeling guilty. But you know, it's also hard because there is no such thing as being a perfect farmer there, because there's always more you can do. There's always something you could have done better, or some, you know, job you could have done a little bit more perfect. And so being okay with, you know, knowing that you are doing a good job, or even knowing, you know, not feeling bad about the 100 things I'm not doing, knowing, okay, I set a priority that today I need to do this job, and it's okay that I'm only doing this job because I'm only one person. I can only be in one place at a time, and I am doing the job that is the most important right now. And to remind myself of that and not to let my mind go to the 100 other things.
I just have a couple of points I'm going to add, but first I'm going to say, Kevin, you should write a book. You've like, I've written down so many things you've said today because they're just brilliant.
Me too.
But you know, what I want to say in follow-up to what Kevin was saying first is, yes, comparison is the death of confidence. And so I think it's important to remember, like Kevin was saying, that everybody is on their own journey. Everybody has their own thresholds. And there's usually a lot going on with people that we are unaware of. Part of why we're having these conversations this month. The other thing that I would say, as far as the guilt or feeling like, again, you're not keeping up or comparing yourself to others. And this is the mental gymnastics that I get from my therapist. Kind of an ongoing theme, because it just kept coming up in sessions, was the concept of both and, where at the very beginning, Kevin, I was going to say this, where yeah, right now with farming, it can both be your dream and it can be a nightmare some days. You know, these things that, like, thinking everything exists singularly in a vacuum, that's not the way the world works. A lot of it is dichotomies or even more than that, right? So it's both and, it's light and dark. And I think that I know for me has been a really important thing that I've learned in therapy, and has been part of my kind of ongoing homework that I get is, you know, when I am feeling down or feeling like, feeling guilty, especially, you know, think of it as a both and, like, yes, I can both be happy with a certain situation and I can be frustrated by it. Or, you know, it's like, oh yes, I love my job and I do. I'm both in love with my job and have days where it's just really exhausting. And I'm just like, ugh, you know, that's totally normal. So I'm really glad that you spoke to that, Kevin. But we are getting about close to needing to wrap. So I'm just curious, Kevin, is there any other points you wanted to make? Something you were really hoping we'd ask you about today, but didn't? Any last message you want to share with us and with our listeners?
No, I just want to thank you guys for having me on, and thank you for having a wonderful podcast. I subscribe and I always listen to it while I'm milking cows. You know, even when it's, you know, when you're talking about things that apply mostly to bigger confinement dairies, or to managing employees and setting systems or whatever, it always gets me thinking and thinking about improving my management. And so thank you for doing a wonderful job, and thank you for having me on and asking good questions.
Well, thank you for that glowing review, Kevin. Yes, like I said, you. Kevin has been one of our early listeners. So we're so excited that he's gotten to be on the show with us now. And before we wrap and do some plugs, I want to give a huge shout out and thank you to Kevin's wife, Renee. I know that it is not easy to be a partner to somebody in crisis or that has struggles with their mental health. And you touched on that, Kevin. You know, it can be tough for them. And I think it's so great that you recognize that. And like I said, I just want to give her a shout out because she is phenomenal. I love seeing her pop up on Twitter every now and again, too. I know that she does a lot on the farm as well. And I think it's so great that she was the one to really help connect you to getting help in the first place. So shout out to Renee for sure.
I will pass that on, and I will make sure she listens to this episode.
Yes.
Perfect.
Yeah. We talked about her a lot. She's great. So with that, questions, comments, I don't think I'm going to accept scathing rebuttals about this episode, but if you have anything you want to say, you can always email themoosroom@umn.edu.
That's themoosroom at umn.edu.
You can find Kevin at Lost Lake Farmer on Twitter, on Instagram, and on TikTok. Lots of great content, so be sure to check him out there. If you are interested in learning more about the farm and checking out their online cheese shop, you can visit LostLakeFarmLLC.com. There you go. Lots of things to follow. But yes, thank you again, Kevin, for being on. This was an outstanding episode. Great conversation. I know I really learned a lot, and I'm very appreciative of your willingness to share your story and to put up with the three of us for far too long. So we will see you next week, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
This is my world. You are just living in it.
That's true.
You guys are so cute.
Yeah.
She is wrong every once in a while when she thinks Holstein is the number one.
Hey, Moose Room listeners, Emily here. We at the Moose Room are busy getting ready for our May mental health series, and we want to hear from you. What questions do you have about mental health, mental illness, stress management, or anything in between? We would love to get your questions so we can answer them on our upcoming Ask the Expert episode for May Mental Health Awareness Month. Send your questions to themooseroom@umn.edu, or you can call and leave us a voicemail at 612-624-3610. Please note any questions or submissions that you send in will be kept anonymous. We appreciate your help and look forward to hearing from you.